Welcome to the Ortho Eval Pal podcast, where we can help you build confidence with your orthopedic evaluation and management skills. We hope you enjoy the show. And now, for your host, Paul Marquis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 312 of the Ortho Eval Pal podcast. I'm your host, Paul Marquis, and today we're going to be talking about rotator cuff tears or subacromial impingement. We'll be going over some of the anatomical differences between a rotator cuff tear and subacromial impingement, talk about the sources of subacromial pain, the differences in signs and symptoms between the two, treatment considerations, and so much more. But if you don't mind holding for a moment, we're going to hear a word from our sponsors.
You've all seen the name Chattanooga in rehab clinics. Chattanooga has been a staple for all your traditional clinical equipment needs, and they are now carrying modalities including high-powered laser, focused shockwave, and radial pressure wave devices. These modalities have the ability to transform your practice from both a clinical and revenue standpoint. Trust me, I have patients traveling over an hour to come have radial pressure wave treatment in our clinic. Click the link in the show notes to request a quote, schedule an in-person demo, or get more information on their new modalities. You can also visit their website at www.lightforcemedical.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. So I'm on the tail end of my two-week vacation. I had a great time. The weather was beautiful here in northern Maine. My lovely wife and I celebrated our 28th wedding anniversary in Quebec City for 3 days, and it was absolutely beautiful. We had a great time, very relaxing, and super nice folks out there, and it just felt like it was good to just get away and get a little bit of rest. We also finished up our cider weekend. We do apple cider every fall and just bring a bunch of people together. My daughter had some friends over and my son had some of his friends over and a couple different families. It was just great to get out there and make some cider and have some fun and just, kick back and chat a little bit and take it easy. So I am going to bring to you today this question that I get an awful lot of, and it is, how do you tell if somebody has a rotator cuff tear versus an impingement syndrome? And there is so much to go over here, but I'm going to do this by starting with some anatomy, and then we'll talk about some of the contributors to subacromial discomfort, and we'll talk to you about why we call it discomfort, and then kind of sort out what are some of the pearls that can tell us if a patient has a rotator cuff tear versus just inflammation in the subacromial space? So let's just go over some anatomy first. We're going to talk about the humerus and the glenoid. You know, we're all familiar with it. It's an inherently unstable joint, okay? Just like a golf ball on a tee. If you take that tee and tilt it just a little bit to the side, the golf ball falls out, right? Well, we are kind of in the same scenario here with the humerus and glenoid. The reason it's so inherently unstable is because there are so many motions that the shoulder goes through, like internal and external rotation, flexion and extension, horizontal adduction, abduction, even pure abduction. So it does a lot. All right. So I'm just going to kind of put this into perspective for you so that you just have a little bit, better way to visualize this since this is an audio podcast and not watching me on a video. But think of the top of the humeral head like a floor, okay? And then superior to that, we have the acromion, otherwise known as the ceiling, okay? So we have the floor and the ceiling. Now let's talk about the contents between the floor and the ceiling, okay? What's in that room? And so right up against the humeral head, we have the rotator cuff tendons, okay? And just above the humeral head and between the rotator cuff tendons and the is the subacromial bursa. And of course, we can't forget the long head of the biceps tendon, which also goes through the bicipital groove in the subacromial space and goes from being an extra articular structure to an intra articular structure. Now, don't forget, the biceps tendon is a huge pain generator. And we know this because I've seen a number of people who have had subacromial discomfort, and I've treated them, and maybe they go home and they do something, and they rupture the long head of the bicep, and they come back and they say, I heard this huge pop, and there's all this bruising in the front of the arm. They've got the Popeye muscle. It's sitting a little inferior, but they're like, my pain went away, like, right away. And so we know that that helps. We also know that when orthopedic physicians do biceps tenodesis or biceps tenotomies, they remove that inflamed portion of the bicep tendon that is in the subacromial space and either let that bicep head drop or they do a tenodesis and attach it on the humerus below the subacromial space and it doesn't become impinged anymore, doesn't get so inflamed, and can really decrease the patient's pain. So yeah, we're going to talk a lot about the rotator cuff today, but I don't want us to forget about that long head of the biceps, okay? So what causes subacromial pain? Well, we use the term impingement a lot. Yes, and there is impingement, but you impinge every time you move that shoulder, especially if you're going to try to flex the shoulder, abduct, internally rotate, or go into a Hawking Kennedy position, like horizontal adduction. You impinge, and most all of us impinge every single day. So using the word impingement is just a little too vague as a diagnosis. Now, you can get pain from repetitive impingement. So the tissue, if it becomes too irritated, too inflamed, and cannot take that extreme of impingement either repetitively or with too much load or too much compression, just like, you know, diving forward with your arms overhead and just, you know, cranking that humeral head up into your acromion and just bashing up everything between the floor and the ceiling, then you're going to get some inflammation in there, okay? And sometimes some soft tissue damage. So we need to be able to kind of sort out if the patient has a rotator cuff pathology, like a tendinopathy, tendonitis, biceps tendonitis, tendinopathy, or maybe a little bursitis in that subacromial space. Now, again, it's very difficult clinically to tease this all out, you know, without having an MRI scan to look at everybody right when you see the patient. But it can be done, and you can certainly tease out certain things. And I want to talk a little bit about the mechanism of impingement and what that mechanism is so that you have a better understanding how we are going to differentiate between a subacromial impingement, quote unquote, or a rotator cuff tear. So it's going to be kind of hard to explain doing an audio podcast, but I'm going to try my best here. So I want to talk a little bit about what the humerus does. Now, when you have your arm by your side, let's say, and you lift your arm into abduction, you're turning on your supraspinatus, which is helping to get the arm started. Your deltoids start to kick in. But what your rotator cuff will do is depress that humeral head. So think about this. You've got two trees, and between those two trees is a hammock. You take a beach ball and you put it in the hammock, and it sits there nicely, doesn't it? So if you go to one side of the hammock and you pull on it, the beach ball will go up. Now imagine we can do this whole hammock scenario, but inverted. So we turn the hammock upside down. It's in the air. The beach ball is in there. We pull on one side of the hammock and it pushes the beach ball down. Well, your rotator cuff does exactly the same thing. Okay. So when you try to elevate your arm, your deltoids start to kick in and they force your humeral head to migrate superiorly. But because your rotator cuff is like a sling over the top of your humeral head, when it contracts, it depresses that humeral head, trying to keep the floor away from the ceiling and then keeping enough room for all the contents in the room to not get irritated or squished. All right. So think about that. Now, we're going to talk about rotator cuff tears here. We've all seen these patients with rotator cuff tears, and they all present so differently. From full motion of the arm after a complete rotator cuff tear to zero motion. I've had people with severe pain to the point where they can barely function, to people who have no pain at all. And we've seen people who have torn one of the four rotator cuff muscles all the way to all four of them being torn. So how do we distinguish, you know, between rotator cuff tear versus a subacromial problem, as you'll hear me term this? It's so easy for us to say impingement, but, you know, is it the inflammation of the rotator cuff, the bursa, or the bicep tendon that is causing this irritation? So let's talk about a couple factors that might make you think in one direction over another. Let's say that we ask their age. It's very unlikely, and I'm talking here, I'm not looking at research to identify this happens mostly with so many people at this age or whatever. I'm talking about experience. This is what I've seen after seeing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of rotator cuff tears and subacromial impingement patients. So it's very unlikely to see a tear in somebody who is under 30 years old. Now, we've seen them on occasion, and if you work in a with a population of people who are, you know, pitchers and volleyball players and things like that, then you're going to start to see a little bit more of that because of the repetitive nature and the amount of force that goes through the rotator cuff. And you'll see that a little bit more in people under 30 years old. But in general, if you're under 30 years old, it's not likely you have a rotator cuff tear unless something very traumatic has happened. Now, that will throw us into the next one, the mechanism of injury. Was there a trauma to the arm? Did the person land in a kind of a foosh position, fall in on an outstretched hand? I've seen that a number of times, and they completely tear their rotator cuff. Was there a direct fall onto the arm, or were they on a stepladder and the stepladder gave out, or they slipped and they reached for a gutter and they hung there, or from a rafter and they hung there and tore the rotator cuff? I mean, we've all seen these, or at least a lot of us who've had some experience with rotator cuff patients, we've seen this happen. And so, you know, don't quote me on this, but my experience has also shown that at night, when people have nighttime pain, it is more likely for people who have rotator cuff tears to have pain no matter what position they're in. So they can be laying on the shoulder that they tore the rotator cuff on, and they could actually get a little bit of relief from that. But it could be painful too. It could be painful when they're on their back. It could be painful when they're laying on their good side. Why? Because that humeral head is trying to fall out of the glenoid. And guess what's trying to hold it in place? The rotator cuff. And so it's kind of always in some level of activity unless you can get in the perfect resting position, in the loose pack position where it's totally supported. It may not have to work as much. But it's more likely that you have soft tissue inflammation in the subacromial space without a tear, when you roll on it, okay? So more people who have that kind of impingement type pain will have more difficulty when they roll onto it, but not so bad when they're in other positions. So just a little tidbit of information. I found it much more likely that a patient has a rotator cuff tear if they have pain, and no matter what position they're in, especially if there's been some sort of a trauma to the arm. Special tests are, again, glorified selective tissue tension tests. I like the NEARS test, the Hawking-Kennedy test. I like the SPEEDS test. I think they can be helpful. But you need to remember that when you do some of these tests, if you're kind of in an acute, subacute situation, all of these can hurt with a rotator cuff tear or with just some subacromial impingement or inflammation in the subacromial space. So what I usually hang my hat on more often, though, is manual muscle testing and observation. So I like the bear hug test. I like the liftoff test, especially to help rule out a subscapularis tear. I always do the empty can test, which I find very helpful with supraspinatus. But again, I'm observing more. So if I do an empty can test and they're kind of struggling to hold it, and maybe it's a little bit painful, that may just be inflammation in the subacromial space. Whereas if you do that test and the shoulder starts to hike and you see this humeral head elevation while they're doing that, and there's a little giving way to the arm, then you need to be more suspicious of a tear. I always test for external rotation and to see if there's an infraspinatus tear or teres minor tear, and I'll find that that will be more of a kind of a giveaway weakness rather than a cogging type of weakness. If it's cogging, oftentimes it's just inflamed and painful and they're still trying to fight it. But if there's a tear, it can kind of be a little sloppy when you're giving them resistance. I'll also check on abduction. I'll put them at 90 degrees, give them resistance. And now remember, the deltoids are pretty efficient in that position. But if they are not getting good humeral head depression from the rotator cuff, they'll hike a little bit more and they'll have some giving way. So those are kind of some of the things that I like to watch. You know, I observe the shoulder as they're moving. And I always start with, you know, functional movements. Can you lift your arm straight up overhead and out to the side? Can you reach behind your back? I love to do this one. I want you to reach for the back of your head. And you know, if your patient has a good-sized rotator cuff tear, or even a lot of inflammation, subacromial space, they'll flex that neck forward so they can get that hand back there over their head because they can't externally rotate, abduct, and flex it all at the same time. So you'll see this compensatory movement, almost like you would see in a lag sign, okay? The other thing I look at, manual muscle testing, is it painful? Or is there a severe weakness with no pain or minimal pain, which you would see in a massive tear? So what I've seen is when you have a massive tear, you don't have the tissue tearing anymore. They're both separated. So therefore, you're not getting so much nociceptive input, but you just find they have very little, you know, strength. You put them into flexion, or you put them into abduction, do a drop arm test, and it just drops to their side, but they really have no control over it. They say, you know, I think about it, but I just can't hold it up there. So more likely to be a tear in a situation like that. It seems like the smaller tears are really the more painful ones. Fortunately, they recover a little bit better after surgery because, there's just a lot less damage there and the tissue is so much easier to repair. So remember this, there are many people with subacromial inflammation that can present just like a person with a rotator cuff tear. And I've seen this time and time again. Some of my worst, rotator cuff injuries were the least painful, and some of the smallest were very, very painful. I have seen people come in with just some slight, some rotator cuff inflammation, and they can't lift that arm off their side. And within a week, they've got full motion and starting to develop good strength. So I don't jump to conclusions too quickly. I mean, it's not like, rupturing a quadricep, which has to be repaired immediately or within, 10 days or so, those outcomes are much better. A distal bicep should be repaired expeditiously. But rotator cuffs, I've seen them repaired, within 2 to 3 weeks from time of injury to 10 years after injury. And patients have done well. If the integrity of the tissue is good, that is great. But my thought has always been this. If I'm suspicious of a rotator cuff tear, and I am quite convinced it's a rotator cuff tear, then I'm more likely to call an orthopedic surgeon or recommend the patient see their orthopedic surgeon, get an MRI, consider surgery, because that rotator cuff tissue is going to retract. It's going to scar down a little bit. And so it's going to be much more difficult to repair afterwards. And so that healing can be a little bit different, could be a little more delayed. And there could be some long-term issues with that. And there are many considerations here, but we're not going to get into that because that is a topic for another day. But I also want you to remember that, when you have inflammation in that subacromial space, that causes a lot of reflex inhibition. Okay, so no different than the quad shutting down after having a knee scope. You tear your rotator cuff or you inflame your rotator cuff, your bicep tendon, it causes inflammation in subacromial space. Your rotator cuff wants to shut down, and guess what? You try to lift your arm, your humeral head elevates, as we talked about earlier. You develop some impingement that causes more inflammation, which that inflammation causes more pain, and then you develop more muscle shutdown. And if the rotator cuff is shutting down, you're getting more superior migration of the humeral head and the glenoid, eroding that superior labrum and superior portion of the glenoid, causing impingement of those soft tissues. And it just becomes a vicious cycle. So you have to get these people calmed down a little bit. Some non-steroidal anti-inflammatories can be very helpful. A subacromial injection can be very helpful in decreasing that pain so that you can get them to a point where you can start to activate and turn on that rotator cuff. Now, I want to talk about a few pointers here, okay? Patients with rotator cuff tears are likely to show some superior migration of the humerus on x-ray. Okay, so not a bad idea to check out that x-ray report or take a look at the images yourself. If somebody, injured their shoulder, they went in for a standard x-ray, and you look at the AP view, somebody with a torn rotator cuff will have some superior migration of that humeral head because the rotator cuff, again, like that inverted hammock, is not holding it down in the glenoid very well. Another pointer, and that I use this if patients come in and they're like, yeah, it's been 3 months since I hurt my shoulder, and they've got a moderate amount of pain, and I'm kind of trying to sift through, is this just a subacromial inflammatory problem, or is this a rotator cuff tear? I might give them a, you know, couple 5-pound dumbbells and say, give me the perfect bicep curl. And I'll watch the arm that is affected. And sometimes you need to put a little more load than that if you feel they can tolerate that safely. I might go 8 to 10 pounds with a patient. And I'll say, go ahead and give me a nice bicep curl. And on the affected side, you may see the hand and the dumbbell migrate into internal rotation toward the belly as they're lifting it. They can't keep that arm externally rotated, so the arm is in neutral. And that is a great sign that they probably have a rotator cuff tear, and usually of the external rotators, because the external rotators need to hold the arm in neutral. But if you put a load in that hand and you do a bicep curl, it's going to want to fall in toward the belly. Those external rotators aren't there. It's going to start to fall in, and it can be a sign of a rotator cuff tear. And I may have that in a video that I'm going to try to put in a bunch of videos of patients with rotator cuff tears today in the links. So be sure to check those out so you can see what the real deal looks like. I like to start rotator cuff isometrics early in safe position. So that arm might be by their side doing internal, external rotation, flexion, extension, some light abduction. And then as they start to do well with the isometrics, I might start with TheraBand and just work in a very limited range, in a pain-free range of maybe 10 to 20 degrees of complete motion, and slowly build that up over time. I'll definitely jump on scapular retraction exercises. I'm big on that with almost all rotator cuff or subacromial impingement issues. I mean, try this out sometime. Sit in your chair and keep your shoulders back. Sit there with great posture and then flex your arms straight up overhead. Bring your arms next to your ears. Bring them right up, okay? Now put your arms down. And then what I want you to do is I want you to slouch forward. And I want you to bring your shoulders together in the front like you're trying to squeeze them together, and then try to flex those shoulders again. And you're going to have a hard time. Like, it's classic. I've never seen anybody have the same amount of motion on the second part than they did on the first part, because you're taking that acromion, you're bringing it anterior, you're causing more impingement. So with that being said, I push scapular retraction a lot to try to get those shoulders back and then clear the subacromial space and put a little bit more room between the floor and the ceiling. So I think that is something that you need to do. Slowly work into that, but I do scapular retraction right away. Elbow, hand, and wrist activities are safe to do. I like to start with that. And then you're going to just kind of give these people a little bit of time, okay? If it's a subacromial inflammatory problem, they'll probably settle down with a little bit of rest, some non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, progressive rotator cuff activation. But if they don't start to see some improvement and they still have, you know, consistent weakness with the same ranges in the same motions, you need to be looking down the road of a rotator cuff tear. And again, like I said earlier, I'm going to add some videos of patients who have rotator cuff tears so you can see what they present like. And like I said, they don't all present the same. And that's what makes evaluating and treating shoulders so interesting and challenging and rewarding, in my opinion. I know you're going to have questions about today's podcast because, you know, my live courses on shoulders are, you know, 7 to 8 hours, and I usually get a ton of questions around this specific topic because it can really challenge a person when you see a patient come in and it's so bad. I just had a patient, you know, that came in about 4 months ago who had severe shoulder pain. We totally suspected he had a rotator cuff tear. He had all the positive signs of it, but we said, you know, let's not get crazy about, you know, MRI and all that stuff. Let's just kind of give you a little bit of time. Let's let it settle down. This is a very big husky guy who could bench press 400 pounds last year prior to this injury. And you know, we gave him a little bit of time and he started to get stronger and stronger and stronger, but just had a little bit of difficulty maybe throwing a ball or you know, doing things like that. So he had an MRI, and the MRI identified that he had a rotator cuff tear and a labral tear. But to this day, 4 to 5 months later, he is as strong as an ox in all positions and very, very functional. And it does not feel like he needs to have surgery. So just because they have tears doesn't mean we have to jump the gun and get crazy with them. So again, I know you're going to have questions about this. If you do have questions about today's show, just email them to me. I'm going to have this all linked in the show notes. Just click on my email, send it over to me. I'll do my very best to answer. I do get lots of questions now on YouTube and through our email. So I'll do my best to get back to you. If I don't, you know, send me a reminder and I'll see what I can do about getting back to you. So hope you all enjoyed the show today. Be kind to each other and take care.
We hope you've enjoyed the show. For some more awesome content, go to orthoevalpal.com. Can't wait to see you there.